Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Leadership is Changing podcast. Great to have you here with us. My name is Dennis Giannoutsis and I'm your host. Hey, I interviewed a guy by the name of Robert Brill, and he is the CEO of Brill Media. Now, he's worked in the advertising industry for about 20 years and a great guy. We talked about all sorts of things, and the title of the episode is Leadership is About How You Make People Feel. Now, one interesting thing we talked about was technology, and he talked about being a tech tinkerer. And so you as a leader, making sure that you tinker with tech and learn and understand it more. But he explains more about that. And also he talked about how you come across as a leader, as a person, is important. We also talked about the fact that leadership does really happen at every single level of an organization. Had a great conversation with him, so sit back and enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Leadership is Changing. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change. This is taking your leadership to another level by finding the balance between executive excellence and personal well-being through stories that inspire real change. It's time to adapt in our fast-moving world when leadership is changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsis.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Leadership is Changing podcast. Great to have you here with us. I've got an awesome guest with me. His name is Robert Brill. Robert, a massive welcome to you.
Thanks. A massive thank you, Dennis. This is awesome.
Excellent. Now, whereabouts in the world are you today?
I'm in Los Angeles, sunny SoCal.
Oh, you had to put the sunny piece in there, eh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Gotta rub it in. We're paying the weather tax, so might as well talk about it.
You pay a weather tax?
It's a joke. Everything's more expensive here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That's the weather tax. Like, you could move to Texas and things will be a lot less expensive, but the weather doesn't work.
Yeah. I've been to LA just to catch connecting flights from New Zealand, but I've been to San Francisco a lot because HP, where I worked, and Palo Alto and things like that. And they bought out another company that I worked for, EDS, which was in Dallas, Plano, Texas. And so you're right. Look at the two different places, the two different pricing. People say to me, where would you want to live? I went, Dallas? Because you get way more for your dollar, right? It's just amazing.
You get way more. It's also very beautiful to work, to live in Texas. I flew into the wrong airport once.
Who was the pilot?
It was the pilot, not me making the wrong booking. And I had to drive from, I think, Austin, Texas to Dallas, Fort Worth.
Yep.
Beautiful drive. It's just such an easy drive. The houses were beautiful. It's all green. It was just such a fun place.
Yeah. And I know that Dallas has got more expensive since the Toyotas and the other big companies have gone in there. They've taken their headquarters into that because of tax and things like that and incentives for them. But still very cheap living in that there. But and the people in the US, I think, are just great people. It's just, I really like it. Yeah. It just depends what sporting team you probably support, right?
We're a big sports agency and we run ads for rugby. I'm a big fan of Inter Miami and soccer, but the biggest fan is going to be the Los Angeles Dodgers, who just signed Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, now that's baseball, right?
That's baseball, yes.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. I love it. There's so many things happening there. A big organization, big country. And it's really quite cool. So I've given the listeners a little bit of an introduction to the episode here. Now, I understand that you've worked in advertising for about 20 years. You must have started at the age of 6, I think, so you're very young.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
Yeah, it's all good. You're the CEO of Brill Media, a digital advertising agency for scalable business growth. Now, the company's been honored in different sort of, both in Inc. 5000 and also in relation to the Financial Times 500. Robert, what we'd like to know is a little bit more about your background. What have you done and so forth? That'll be great.
Yeah, I was really fortunate. When I, 2 weeks out of college, I got a job at one of the largest multinational ad agencies in the world, Universal McCann. And you might think, boy, he must have had some great connections. His parents knew someone. And it was just purely out of hard work. And I talk about that because my parents, they emigrated from Romania and then they met here. And so they didn't have any of those connections. In fact, they didn't know like standard things that a lot of Americans know, like Dr. Seuss and whoever else. So growing up was really, it was like adjacent to like American parenting, but just not quite exactly it.
When did they immigrate? Yeah. How long ago?
In the 70s.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. My dad immigrated from Greece to New Zealand in the 60s.
I love Greece. Holy cow. Where in Greece?
So a little island. So now if you, between Italy and Greece, there's Corfu. So yeah. It's a little island below that. And yeah. It's untouched. It's about 7 kilometers. So I don't know how much that would be in miles, but it's very small. In the sort of winter time, there would be about 29 to 30 people on the island in winter. And in summer, it might swell to about just over 100 people. So it's untouched. It's great. So if you're an investor or you're looking to, just stay away.
Yeah. Just like, we're not even going to tell you the name of it. Like, just don't show up.
I'll tell you the name off air, right?
I won't.
Yeah. Cool. Carry on.
Yeah. Anyway, so grew up in Los Angeles and I felt sorry for myself when I went to college because I had to work. But that work experience gave me 4 or 5 extra years of work to figure out what I liked and what I don't like. One of the internships I had was for a startup ad agency working out of someone's garage. They told me all the types of different work you can do in the advertising business. I graduated. I knew exactly the job title, digital assistant, digital media buyer. I knew exactly what to focus on. I found the job. I got hired. I don't know why they hired me. There's so many better qualified people, but somehow they like me better than anyone else. Hired me. And I've worked in advertising for 20 years. And for the last 10 years, I've been bootstrapping Brill Media to millions of dollars in annual revenue.
Awesome, man. Congratulations. That's fantastic. What was it like for you to transition out of that 20-year career for another business and then go and start your own thing, your own gig? What was that like for you?
100%. So in 2013, I was 10 years into my career. Oh, yeah. It was exceptionally scary. Because I felt, I wouldn't have characterized it about like this at the time, but looking back on it, I would characterize it as I had practitioner level expertise in digital ad buying. I spent a decade working with large brands, Sony, Disney, Bacardi, Toshiba, PetSmart, et cetera, with their corporate ad buying, reaching customers to generate sales. They had lots of money, big strategic focuses, et cetera. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do this for myself. But I chickened out. It was really scary. I actually did, like a few months after I started my business, I took a full-time job at another agency because I just wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to sell. I wasn't ready to deal with the financial components of the business. A lot of times in advertising, if you're going to run a $100,000 campaign, you get paid the $100,000 you just earned 30, 60, 90 days later. I was like, I don't really want to put out $100,000 because what if they don't pay me? Like, it's scary. Mm-hmm. And so I chickened out. I took a job and I was not good at that job. And it was a good place to work. It just wasn't for me. So anyway, I had this burning desire to really focus in on the business. And I did it. And I focused in. And instead of starting one business, I started 5, which is the absolute wrong thing to do. I was like, okay, I'm going to test. Am I going to do influencer marketing? Am I going to be an influencer? Which no business doing that. The highlight of my influencer career was Holiday Inn Express. Paid me $2,500 for a Vine video, which I loved Vine. Vine was the best. But I can't make a living on videos here and there. I started a consulting firm. I started a social media marketing firm. But the thing that I was the best at that I had done for my 10-year career was digital ad buying. And so the lesson for me and that I tell anyone who is ever interested is focus on the thing where you have the unfair advantage. Determine what your zone of genius actually is. And once I focused on that, that's when the business started to grow.
Excellent. Yeah, so that main focus or niching it down a little bit more will actually help. When you say digital ad buying, is that for things online or is that for TV as well? How does that work?
Yeah, so right now, the vast majority of advertising spend in 2024 is going to be digital. Mm. So most things are digital. The exceptions to that are like magazines, but most magazines are like have ceased to exist. Newspapers don't really exist. The large offline channel is going to be television. It's about a $60 billion business in the US. But like digital advertising is a $307 billion business in the US. So massive. Yeah. And you can see that with your media consumption habits as well.
Oh, absolutely. And what we're seeing here in New Zealand is actually the reason I asked you that question is that we have two major TV stations. So like in the US, you probably have CNN, Fox News, the two major ones probably, I think. Would that be right?
Yeah, there's MSNBC.
Oh, yeah.
Or there's, no, MSN. It's MSN.
Yeah.
Well, Fox, yeah.
Yeah, so New Zealand, we have a small population, 5.5 million people. So we had two. So TV1, which is government, state-owned, but the other one is private, which is owned actually by Disney, and it's called TV3. Well, TV3, the news part of it, is closing down. They're shutting down, making whole people redundant. Why? They're saying that they can't get enough advertising money today, and the popularity of people watching TV, and that is actually decreasing big time, because we're looking at other sources for information and things like that. So
yeah,
it's a big change. Are you seeing that also in the US?
100%. Television is declining. Television a few years ago used to be $70-80 billion in ad spend. It's declining. Journalism in general is having a tough time. Like, I really like the model that the UK has with the BBC. Like, it's a state-funded television. Like, it's like the United States Postal Service. Like, for a long time, it hasn't been profitable for various reasons for that. But it's a really, like, essential way of communicating. And I think local news, everything's local fundamentally, but like local news is so incredibly important. And when you stop having local news coverage, a lot of bad things happen. Like, people, crime spikes, you don't get justice for criminal activity, a lot of bad behavior might happen. So it's really valuable to have local journalism. And I think in the United States and probably other parts of the world, like you have the TV1, state-funded television, it needs to occur, but we're so anti like anything state funding in the United States that it's going to be a hard uphill journey. But anyway, we're talking about journalism. I'm not a journalist, but I think advertising as a support for many fundamental aspects of our society provides a great value that customers often don't recognize.
Yeah. And then you're seeing also people like myself, right? Starting podcasts, you're seeing others doing other kind of platforms as well. It's changing big time. Yeah. Now, Robert, how did you actually get into leadership yourself?
I stumbled into it. It was really one of those moments. So in my very first job was an intern, and then eventually I got paid for it in 2003. By 2009, my job title was director, which is like a six-year improvement or like a time span. But like, people in advertising can spend their entire careers as director. Hmm. And so I was fortuitous to get into advertising when it has started to ascend again, right? You have the 2000.com bubble, you have the 2001 terrorist attacks, you have these various things that depressed the market. And then by the time I got my first job at Universal McCann, 2003, 2004, you had a nice ascension. So I was riding that really nice wave so that I could actually understand the business of advertising and the business of marketing on digital platforms. So I had the practitioner knowledge by 2009, but I didn't have the leadership knowledge. And the way that showed up fundamentally for me was I was really bad at meetings, partially because I was in meetings with people 20 to 30 years more experienced than me. And they're like, okay, you got to say this and this. And I'm like, dude, I need my own thoughts. I can only express my own thoughts. Like, I don't have your worldview about why you should tell me to do things. They're like, no, it's strategic. You got to say this. I'm like, I can't. So I'd have these meetings and I was very tepid. Like, I didn't really know how to talk in meetings. I got nervous. I didn't always perform very well. A few people were like, you got to learn how to speak better. And I was like, okay. So I went to Toastmasters.
Yep.
And I loved Toastmasters. I was only there for 9 months, but it was a dramatic shift. And the most interesting thing I learned about Toastmasters, which is really important for leadership, is the way you come across effective and confident is you practice. And the beautiful thing about being an entrepreneur is you just say the same thing all over and over again in dozens of different ways.
You do. You do indeed. That's why I have 7 standard questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You don't have to remember them. Like, they just roll off your tongue.
Yeah, you're right. You've got to do them in different ways as well and make it happen. But tell me something. When you actually were working with people who were older than you, it sounded like they were trying to tell you as well how to do a lot of things. But how did you find that?
I found it challenging because I can only speak my truth.
Hmm.
And sometimes they didn't necessarily understand the intricacies of what I was trying to communicate. But I would defer to them in a really practical way because I felt that they had more overall business knowledge than I had. I had 6 years of practitioner knowledge in digital advertising. 6 years as a business person isn't that much compared to people with 20, 30, 40 years of business experience.
Yeah. And some of those 20, 30, 40 years, not everybody, just some of them, they just did year one 20 times or year one 30 times, right? Yeah. Because for a lot of them, they didn't actually move or grow a lot. But then some of them did and have a lot of knowledge and experience as well to share, which is good. Yeah. Really interesting how that all works, eh? Hmm.
Yeah. Look, I think I give a lot of credit to the mentors and leaders that I worked with because they taught me so many interesting things about the intricacies of how business happens. But things like it doesn't always matter to be right. It matters to sell. Like, and I have to live it and breathe it and be part of it in order to see it from the inside out. And so when I see people today who are graduating college or they want to be entrepreneurs, I think, first of all, you got to know yourself. Like, there are many people who have no practical business experience who could be great entrepreneurs. Absolutely. I was not one of those people. But what they lack ultimately is they lack the experience to understand the opportunities that they don't recognize the opportunities that come before them in conversations. Like, one of the biggest opportunity is trading on information. Like, simply having a strong knowledge of the situation can help you discern how to make money.
Right.
And if you don't have the experience of having worked for a decade or a few years or whatever the case is, you may not recognize massive opportunities that are standing right in front of you because you're stuck on, I'm going to do it my way, and my way may not be the best way.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Hence why you said before about it doesn't matter about you being right. It's about the matters what you sell, right, and what you do.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a great way of saying it. Yeah. Now, you just mentioned about mentors and things like that. Now, this person could be alive or from history. Who's been your favorite leader and why?
Man, so Obama.
Obama?
I can't say that I study leaders, and I can't say that I could point to individual things that he or she has done that makes him a great leader. I think one of the things I've recognized early on as I was growing my company, so not early on in total, but just over the last few years, I recognize that leadership is about how you make, one of the things about leadership is how you make people feel. And I had this really great boss. His name is Elias Plishner. He's big, big title at Sony Pictures. And he was my first agency boss at Universal McCann. And as I was going through some challenges with my company, people asked me, what leadership have you experienced that you enjoyed? I thought of him, Elias Plishner, because I knew nothing. All they were doing was paying me not to mess things up and also to learn. But like, I wasn't really contributing anything for the first 6 months of me working there. And so as a result, I appreciate him so much because he made me feel like I wasn't going to screw things up if I made a mistake. It was a very safe environment. Yeah. And as a leader in my business, I want to create that safety for my people. So when I look at leadership, I think leadership is probably a lot of things. And I've only been in business for 20 years. Like, hopefully I have another 20 to go and I can learn a lot more. But I think leadership is how you make people feel. And look at Obama, the oration, that the movement he's created around him and the respect he's delivered around him. I think it would be amazing to meet him.
Okay, so that's good because that was going to be my next question. So if you and Barack Obama are sitting on a park bench, I don't know where, somewhere, and you two are having a cup of coffee together, would there be one question you would love to ask him?
How did you deal with the challenges, all the challenges? Pick a challenge and tell me how you dealt with it. Because I bet he'd have some like crazy story of how he mind melded with someone and made them see his perspective through a fancy choice of words. I'm like, I want to learn that.
Yeah.
Mindset.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Actually, I've got a question for you because I'm sitting outside of the US just watching how things happen there. I'm not interested in going into which politics is better and things like that, but thinking about it, and I go, like, you've got millions of people there. You've got governors and senators who are really good people as well. And it's just, how do you come up with one or two people who are fairly old in age today, right? And so it's like Obama was younger as a president versus others who aren't. So how do we actually make sure that we tap into people who are not just because of race, color, or any other thing as well, gender, things like that, but it's about the talent. It's about the person that can get the thing done. How do we make sure we actually get the right people on board?
Well, what I'll, unrelated to politics, but much more important for our business is we just hire off of meritocracy, like who's the right person?
Right.
Like in the United States, we're not allowed to ask the person's age. So I literally, like, I'll work with people. I have no idea how old they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter to me how old you are. What matters to me, do you have the right experience to do the thing we need you to do?
Yeah.
Right experience, the right culture, the right fit, right? Like if you're a bad apple, but you have great experiences, I don't want you. If you are the best person in the world, but you don't have the experience, I can't work with you. So it has to be that combination of you're going to be additive to the culture of the organization, you're going to be additive to the people around you, and you're going to be able to do good work.
Yeah. I think sometimes you can have the most talented person, but would have an attitude that stinks. Then they come, it's hard. It's very hard to have them on board, the high maintenance. Where if you have someone who doesn't have all the skills, but a lot of it's there, but I've got an awesome attitude, you can grow them, you can help, you can develop them. And that's the right person to have on board.
100%. There's the big thing that I just kind of like became concrete in my brain is, I can't remember her name now, which is unfortunate, but there's a psychologist or sociologist who came up with the idea around mindset in like the 70s. And there's two types of mindsets, right? There's an abundance mindset and a fixed mindset. The fixed mindset says basically like, I am who I am and I won't be able to improve or do anything outside of that. And when the world is going to happen and I'm just going to hopefully not get taken advantage of. But the growth or abundance mindset says, I'm a lifelong learner. I will continuously improve. And while some situations may be out of my control, I can control the things in my control. That level of growth or abundance mindset is going to be very important for us.
Are you talking about Carol Dweck?
Yes, that's exactly who it is.
Yeah. Very good book out there, listeners. It's called Mindset. If you haven't already read it, please, I think both of us would encourage you to read it because it's a very good book. But yeah, so it's wonderful. Now, Robert, the show here, because I'm going to talk to you loud now like a marketing/advertising digital guy. Hey, the show here is called Leadership is Changing. When we talk about that title or that statement, what does it mean for you?
That means that leadership is changing.
So it's simple. Yeah.
It means to me that the world is dynamic, people are dynamic, and it's important to wield power responsibly to get the best outcomes that you can possibly get for whichever side you're wielding power for, your family, your friends, your culture, your politics, your business, whatever the case is.
Well, that was awesome. I hope we're recording that. That was awesome what you just said. Of course we are recording it. It's really good, yeah. So, but I like what you just said there too. Leadership is changing because it is simple as that. That's what it is, and we don't really need to complicate it. Things are changing, and even the examples you gave earlier on as well, right, about you going into the different roles that you did, the way you're seeing things being done, older generations telling you what to do, but also you're having to bring in other things. All of that comes down to the fact that it's changed. You talking about going into starting your own business, then getting a full-time job, then going back into your business again, trying all those different things, all of that is change. And it's about you leading that change, which is very important. Yeah.
And it's to me also, it's about being okay. It's okay. Like, it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like in that moment where I had that one job, after I started my business, I felt like, man, I missed the boat. I knew other people who were also starting their agencies, like, oh man, they're going to have a leg up on me. And I think what I've come to understand with anything meaningful, relationships, getting married, losing weight, buying a home, running a business, achieving product market fit, whatever thing you're working on, it's okay if it happens in fits and starts. And there was like basically my business create like what came into existence over like a 3-year, 4-year process. There was like 2 years where I was just like, hey, I probably should do this, but I thought I was going to retire from the company I was working at. So I was like, it's fine. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. And the only contribution for 3 months was like starting the LLC and some other stuff. And then I took a job. And then it was like, these fits and starts happen in big, important ways. And I think that's okay.
Do you know what? I think sometimes things happen for a reason, right? And so it's obvious that you were meant to be doing the business. I remember coming out of HP, I decided I wanted to leave because I've been wanting to do my business, went through the health scare, as I told you about. My boss came to me, had a package, I left, and it was all very good. But I still knew that I wanted to start that business, but I still went and put my resume out to 10 different organizations. And I didn't hear back from them. And I was like, what the heck's going on? About 3 months later, I was having a coffee with somebody. He says to me, oh, your resume is really impressive and that, but your phone number's wrong.
Oof.
And I went, what? He goes, your phone number's wrong. So I went back and I went and looked at all of them, and just about every single one of them, I had the wrong email and wrong I don't know how that happened. I don't know why it happened. Well, I do. I think I know what happened because I should be doing my business, right? Right. And so sometimes we think we want to go and do something here, and there's that fear that sometimes life pushes us to go and do what we should be doing.
In the immortal words of Dr. Ian Malcolm from Jurassic Park, life finds a way.
It does. It does indeed. Yeah. We may not like it at the time. It might be feeling really uncomfortable, but life does find a way. Now, you and I tend to be living in a world whereby it's getting faster. We see whereby technology is driving a lot of it. You're talking about the digital advertising side of it. Data, business, social, everything seems to be getting faster. For a leader to succeed in today's fast-paced, changing world, what do they need to do to be successful?
You got to be a tech tinkerer. My number one piece of advice, which encompasses a lot, just play with stuff, figure things out. I think just introducing the concept of play in business is so important. Like, I really love what I do, partially because I've built up a system for me that allows me to focus on the things I love. And even if, like, I think everyone has the ability to play with ChatGPT, to play with Midjourney on Discord, to play with all the different AI tools in their spare time for their business, in ways to improve their business and make their output more effective. And I think just as individuals, we should look at business as play. Like, yeah, we need to do good work. And yes, we need to be experts in our fields, but also like try new things and see if they become, if any of them stick. As an organization, I encourage my team to like play around with all the AI tools that are available. And if any one of them sticks out as like a massive benefit, like we just introduce it into the larger org. Like, for example, something very simple like Grammarly is AI infused now. It helps.
Yeah. I tell you what, that Grammarly is really great. I wish they had it when I'm doing workshops on these big flip charts I have up there, and ask people, the audience, to share words. And I go sometimes, can you make it a simpler word? Because there's no spell checker on the flip chart. So it'd be quite good. Yeah. But I like what you just said there about the fact that be a tech tinkerer. Play with things, look at business as play. I think even as leadership, look at that as play, but in a way whereby you're trying things, doing things differently just to see how it goes. But I think the big thing would be learn from it. And then what do you do with it then going forward is going to be really key. And you know, I love what you just said, tech tinkerer. That's really cool. Justifies all the different things that I sign up to. But sometimes you got to remember to unsign from them too, because yeah, otherwise you keep on getting charged, right?
I was 100% just thinking about that. There's like a few tools that I have. Like there's one thing called Blaze.ai.
Yep.
That I'm paying for, and I have 100% no idea what it is. I'm paying for it. And I got to like do something about this.
You're probably the best customer. Thank you. Yeah. Which is good. Yeah. So, okay. So I think the other thing too would be the way I say it sometimes is leaders may need to be a little bit more digital savvy. In other words, you don't have to be the expert. That's not what we're saying, but to have some knowledge of how things work or what's out there. Because you could be missing out on something that could be making things a lot easier for you and in business.
I think working with experts and expertise is going to be critical. And I'll tell you why. There's 10 million businesses that advertise across Facebook and Instagram. And a lot of them fail. According to Neil Patel, 64% of them fail at their advertising efforts. Because they are headline readers. And because they're looking for the easy path. And the easy path on Facebook is called the boost button.
Mm.
The boost button basically gives Facebook the ability to earn a few hundred dollars a month from millions of businesses. But there's no strategy. There's no thinking. There's no objectives. There's no good reason for why they should be spending that money. The business thinks they're doing good, but they're actually just throwing money down the toilet. And I'll give you a few reasons why. Some clients tell us, we're just going to boost this post. And I say, why? Well, because we developed the ad. People should see it. And that even by itself sounds fine. But the way to use Meta is actually to create a bunch of different creative executions, test them, and understand out of hundreds which one is the most effective. There's a literal scientific method to deploy with control and variable testing, powered by Meta's machine learning algorithm to find your best customers. Like, there's a 30-minute video on our website. We can take you through exactly how to do that. But fundamentally, it's just like going back to, you need a vision. you need to know what you're trying to achieve. And too many businesses are spending money with marketing and advertising, and they don't know what their goals are. You're like, cool, I got more likes. You can't pay your bills with likes. Likes, comments, and shares don't pay the bills. Leads and sales pay the bills. Keep your accounting team busy. So when you run boosts, I'm not advertising, I'm boosting. No, that's advertising. By definition, when you spend money to reach an audience and you're paying a platform or someone like that, you are by definition advertising. If you're not spending money, then you're promotion, you're doing SEO, you're doing marketing, you're doing something else. But advertising, fundamentally, you have to be spending money with a publisher to reach your audience. So boosting equals advertising, but chances are you're doing it with no strategy. How much revenue do you want to have? Do you want prestige? Do you want power? Do you want headcount? Do you want to go live 6 months of your life on an island every year? What are your goals for the business? And work with an expert to help you understand all the things you need to do to achieve those goals. No one expects me to be able to help you when something hurts on your body. Why? Because I'm not a doctor, nor to be a plumber, nor to be a mechanic or legal stuff. You'd talk to a lawyer. We'll all willingly pay experts. And in fact, a lot of B2B business owners are the experts in their field, but they don't want to pay experts in marketing and accounting and whatever else because they want to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And what you're actually doing is you're wasting, in the form of opportunity cost, you're wasting thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours doing the wrong thing in Facebook and taking yourself farther away from the goal of your business, which is growing it in whatever method you want to grow.
Wow, that is awesome. That is awesome. Thank you. I think you're spot on what you just said there. Wow. I remember just this podcast, right? A lot of people are like, oh, how did you do it? I just went to the guy who's like number two in the world, John Lee Dumas. I don't know if you know that name. Entrepreneurs on Fire. Yeah. And said to him, what do I need to do? What can you mentor me? He says, Dennis, I'd love to. I don't actually have time, but here's number 10 in the world who I work with, and he knows what he's doing too. Go to Travis. So I went to Travis and I worked with Travis, right? And it's about investing in yourself, but getting the right people around you. And he saved me so much time. And we launched it, and we launched it really quick. In fact, we launched it within 2 weeks. And he was like, what the heck? But it was all good. So I love what you say. It's because I say to a lot of leaders, look, when you go into LinkedIn, using LinkedIn, don't just do the likes, because anyone can do a like. It's about you wrapping your words around your opinion, your thoughts. That's what people are more interested in. That's where you start to become known for as part of your brand, right? And I think the other thing too is, I love what you say, it's about leads that turns into sales, where you're converting them into sales, right? That's where you get paid, which is all very good. We're about to launch a new guide, we're calling it. It's as a result of doing a whole lot of interviews with nearly close to 300 leaders around the world. There's like these 30 themes that have come out, but we've taken the top 10 and we've got 4 to 5 bullet points underneath each one, which are really like key insights or lessons. And then there's the 10 ways to lead in today's world. That's what it is. And so it's a lead magnet. And then there's the funnel that sort of follows after that as well, right? So it's about getting to people, helping them understand what we can do for them to help them. But then it's about how can we convert that into a sale to help people move forward.
Yeah, and there's a marketing plan around all that, and it's insightful and strategic. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, it's very cool. Excellent. Now, you and I have been talking about leadership from the lens through a leader's perspective. If we quickly talk about it from an employee's lens, has employees' expectations of leaders changed? What are you seeing?
I think I've always been very entrepreneurial. Like, even in my early job, I had responsibilities that later got broken out into many different types of roles. Like, an example is, for a long time in various roles that I had, not just one, I was the ad buyer. I talked to the client. I did the reporting. Inside our business right now, because we found it's the best practice for what we do, we have one group of people who do the ad buying. They don't talk to the clients. We have account managers who talk to clients. They don't touch the ad buying platform. They have a different team that does reporting. I think what I've learned by working with, and I don't think this is an age issue, because there are people of a few different generations in the mix that I'm thinking about, that I think individuals, if they are empowered, will help orient the business towards the right path such that they can be set up for success. And what that means to me is, I want individuals who are going to push back on me and say, no, like you, it's, I can't do my work effectively, like buyers. I can't do my work effectively if you're having me talk to clients. I may need to hear it a few times from a few different people, some more junior, some more senior. But collectively, I'm not here to be right about whatever structure I thought might be good for the business. I'm here to be build a successful business, and I'll be the first to tell you I'm wrong. I'll be the first to tell you that I'm the block. Or that I'm the reason why things are happening slowly. I want individuals on my team who are empowered to actually tell me what the business needs to be successful. And I get that that's much harder in a small business than a large business. Yeah. I totally get that, especially with tons of bureaucracy and tens of thousands of employees and financial regulations and pharmaceutical stuff. I get all that. But fundamentally, as an employee, one of the biggest things that I needed help with was managing up. I was told multiple times, look, you can do what you got to do, but you got to tell people above you, like who you report to, like what you're actually doing and what the problem is and what needs to be solved and what they need to be looking out for. I'm just in my own world, tinkering away, trying to make things happen.
Yep.
So I think leadership happens at every single level. Yep. And an organization enables a great organization by making it okay for individuals at every level of the organization to speak up, share their mind, and help improve the overall business.
Yeah. I like what you say there. It happens at every level of the organization. And managing up, you're so right. You know, for a lot of people, they go, oh, I don't want to say anything because it's the fear of repercussion and things like that. I'm like, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And it's actually showing you how to do that, right?
Also, look, there's a chain of command, right? It's like, I can't have 10 people all telling me random things that I just, like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
They have to follow a chain of command, and it's up to every level of leadership to determine, is this important enough to bubble up to the next level of leadership inside the organization? Or is this person's perspective wrong and I need to kind of like, correct the path that they're on? Fundamentally, communication is going to be very valuable as long as the business ultimately succeeds. But if you have one person that's going rogue and they're just doing their own thing, communication will solve that, actually. If you can communicate without fear of repercussion, no egos, we eat our own dog food, we're just going to improve the business, open lines of communication do wonders to keep the rank and file individuals inside the business very happy because they have a voice.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be a fear of being punished.
Yeah, that's very good. Hey, where do you see leadership being in 5 years as we bring this episode to a close? Where do you see it being in 5 years?
Where do I see what in 5 years?
Leadership being in 5 years.
Look, I think leadership is going to be about using tech tools to drive revenue for organizations. There's a business called Klarna, which is, they provide credit for like everyday purchases. And my understanding is they laid off like hundreds of people over the last like year or two. And they have reported in like official SEC filings and et cetera in their quarterly reports that they're having AI do the work of those hundreds of people. And it's far more profitable because of that. So I think leadership is about stewarding a business and stewarding individuals towards success. And once a person is part of the group of people who are encapsulated by the leadership, by the leader, that person has a responsibility to keep the individuals doing well, being successful, themselves being successful, the business being successful, and the clients being successful. You're not just here. A leader is not just here for the benefit of the business. It's for the benefit of everyone the business touches. And that, I think, is going to be a very important point for successful leadership.
Excellent. What a way to finish there. Robert, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Hey, if our listeners are wanting to get hold of you, where should they go?
Brillmedia.co, B as in boy, R-I-L-L media.co. Click the start now. You'll be able to set a time with me, and we'll talk about your marketing and advertising needs.
Excellent. Well, it's been a real pleasure, as I said. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. There you go, listeners. Well, interesting conversation there as well. Leadership is about how you make people feel. it's not just about being a matter of being right. It's about a matter of selling things. And you can click a whole lot of things, make a comment, share things. That's all very good that Robert's just talked about. It comes down to leads and converting those leads into sales. That's where it counts. Alrighty. Hey, if you're a leader out there, become that tech tinkerer. Have fun with it. The business is where you should be playing and enjoying it. Hey, it's a pleasure being with you. Thanks for joining. Until next time, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leadership is Changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change, inspiring executives and leaders to adapt and lead a bigger game in a fast-moving world.